It's the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 164. I am your host, Adam Mangum. In this episode, I am joined by my brother Matt to talk, recap the game against UNLV. What do we think of the defense? What do we think of the offense? And what do we think that translates against Cal in the weekend of Thanksgiving? We also talk about the exciting additions to the 2015 football schedule. Is it going to be as tough as 2013's was? We also recap the first two men's basketball games of the season and talk about how that roster is shaping up. This, again, is the Rise and Shout Podcast. Check us out on iTunes. Check us out and other great stuff at loyalcougars.com. And listen to us right now. Rise and Shout Podcast. Matt, welcome back to the podcast. You took a week off.
I did. There was a week where I was kind of MIA there.
Yeah, that's like, of our 160, this is the 164th episode, which is very exciting. In our 164 episodes, I think you have not been on like three of them.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a monumentous occasion, but we're glad to have you back.
Yeah, just, you know, I'm okay. I'm in action. We're ready to rock and roll. I got a couple questions about it, but everything's good.
Yes. So let's, coming up on the podcast, we'll be talking about the UNLV game, if you want to call it a game.
They played it. It was a game.
They played it. It was a game. And the blackout uniforms are sweet. We'll get to that. 2015 football schedule, which has changed a little bit since you and I last spoke. And then we'll also talk about the first two games of the basketball season. The Southern Virginia game is happening as we record this, but it doesn't count. It is an exhibition game. So, Matt, let's... and by the way, just in case, you can tweet at us at BYU_RiseShout. Of course, you can always email the podcast, adam@loyalcougars.com. So, Matt, let's start with that UNLV game, shall we?
Let's!
So, as we look at this UNLV game, what was your biggest takeaway from that crushing victory?
I feel like I don't mean to be like the wet towel here.
Oh, here it comes. Negative Nelly.
I feel like the defense still needs some work.
The defense was terrible. I'm gonna go a step further. Okay, this was one of the worst rushing teams in the country. And we gave up nearly, if you take out the sacks, we gave up over 200 yards rushing. That is bad.
Yeah, that's not good.
It's bad. The defense, all the hope I had gained against Middle Tennessee, quite frankly, was almost totally lost. Yes, in the end, yards per play was less than 4.5 yards for the 90 plays that UNLV run. But this is a terrible team. Like, this is one of the worst teams in the country.
They're pretty bad.
I mean, yeah, they held the quarterbacks to 44% passing. But again, a lot of that was that backup quarterback who was not good. Well, Decker's not really that good either.
He's the backup quarterback at UNLV. Do we really say more than that?
Well, my favorite part about the broadcast was the announcers making it like Decker was the one that got away. Decker didn't get away.
We got away there.
Yeah, I get that he might be third on the depth chart at where we're at currently, but still, he's not the one that got away. And did he have a chip on his shoulder? I don't know if it matters. Really, whether he had a chip on his shoulder or not. So, Matt, let's flip to the offensive side of the ball. We both agreed defense was not great against a pretty below average offense. But on the offensive side of the ball, were you impressed by what we did on that side of the ball?
Yeah, well, Mitch Matthews, beast mode.
Yeah.
Six catches for 120 yards.
Yes.
And a touchdown. Felt like, he had a pretty solid game. Jordan Leslie looked good. I think 18 to 32 for 325 yards from Christian Stewart. That's respectable.
Three touchdowns. He continues not to throw interceptions, which is good since his rough start against Utah State. He's managed to take care of the ball better and better over time. The rushing game, if, again, you take out the sacks, which I always do when I'm looking at it, the rushing game had, over 7 yards a carry. The offense, I guess, better way to put it, our offensive line did what they should have done against a pretty, below average defensive line and, linebacker core. They just pushed them all over the field.
Right.
So Lasique had a nice night. Nate Carter, again, when he gets a shot, he will hit the holes. We know that about Nate Carter, right?
Yep.
If there's a hole there, he's going to hit it, and he's going to hit it fast, which is great. And Christian Stewart actually had a, you take out those two sacks, and he had, he had a really nice night on his four carries, which I think one was a designed run, and I think the other three were all scrambles on pass plays.
Yeah, I kind of wish he wouldn't do that.
I was okay, because he's outside of one play, he's sliding or going out of bounds, right? Mm-hmm. He's not doing the Taysom, I'm going to run through these guys thing. But I'm with
only
you.
Only takes one.
I'm with you. Let me ask you a question. How many snaps should Christian Stewart take against Savannah State?
Four.
I was going to say like 20. I don't know what they, who plays, honestly. But I do not want to see the week before, basically the only game we've got left. I mean, it's one game at a time now, but really it's about the Cal game, right, at this point?
Yeah, I mean, look, this Saturday, senior day, it's about, getting people playing time, getting a solid win, and getting tuned up for the California game, and just get out of there without any injuries.
Yes.
Especially not an injury to Christian Stewart.
Yeah, well, and I would say the key defensive players that are back, Kafusi, Fua, Levitt, these guys have to stay healthy against Savannah State so that we go in. While I'm very nervous about that California game from a defensive perspective, we are in a much better shape with having those three or four guys who've been hurt a lot this year healthy and on the field than if we're not. Any other takeaways from the UNOVA game? Blackout uniforms look pretty sweet.
Oh, I love the blackout unis. I think the blackout unis are sweet.
Yeah, they're pretty awesome.
Yeah.
They're pretty awesome. So Matt, let's talk about the 2015 schedule, shall we?
Yeah, that's a fun one.
So, since our last podcast, there was an announcement that BYU and Missouri have announced a scheduling deal, the first part of which will be a quote-unquote neutral site, not really, Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City, Missouri, against the Missouri Tigers of the, wait a second, I thought the SEC was never going to schedule us.
Oh, no.
Snap. The associate athletic director of the Missouri Tigers, and this is a quote, said, "We consider BYU to be a P5 school."
Yeah,
not a bad
that's
endorsement,
what I'm talking about.
Right? Not a bad endorsement by associate athletic director of an SEC school. And then the second part of that is Missouri coming to Provo in 2020. Whenever it's that far out, Matt, I'm not too worked up because you never really know. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that game may never happen.
So let's go to
It could be played in Rio Tinto or something. Who knows?
Yes. So let's go to the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
Justin Sweeney, that's at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter. He asks, first, Matt, how many tears did you shed when Taysom Hill announced he'd be staying at BYU and returning for his senior season?
I didn't shed any tears. I didn't ever expect anything different than that.
Man, it's like you and I are on the same wavelength today. And usually you mutter nonsense, honestly.
And then you say crazy stuff.
Yes. Exactly. But you speak reason this time. I same here. It was absolutely suspected. If you go to the draft sites that cover things, even before his injury, he was often the 20th ranked NFL quarterback out of the juniors and seniors. I didn't think there was much chance of him. He needed a full, healthy season of showing that he is more than just a runner. And he was headed that direction, but unfortunately, his season getting cut short really meant there was zero chance of him going to the NFL this year. So, Justin, we did not shed any tears, but we're both very happy that he'll be back. He then continues, the Missouri AD alluded to a team on BYU's current schedule is replacing BYU on UNLV's schedule. So who else is coming to Provo then? I have absolutely no idea.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not even sure I understand what you just said.
But what I said, it's Sweeney. It's not me. But if you look at the Provo schedule for next year, okay?
Right.
Basically, what's happened is we are like an associate member of the Pac-12, the American Conference, and the Mountain West. Right?
Yeah, I can see that.
We've got three Mountain West teams, Boise State, Utah State, and Fresno State. Oh, sorry, four, San Jose. Are they Mountain West? They're Mountain West now, right? I can never keep track of that conference. And then we have three American Conference teams. We have next year just one Pac-12 team, but in the future, like 2016, we open with three Pac-12 teams. And then, of course, we've got a Big Ten in Nebraska, two Big Tens, and then the aforementioned Missouri Tigers game. So, Matt, looking at this schedule, we last year proclaimed the 2013 schedule as the hardest schedule in the history of BYU, whether that's true or not, but we said it.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to be number two after next year?
I don't know if it's going to be number two after next year. I mean, next year is a tough schedule, but I need to know a little bit more about what these teams are going to look like going into the season. You know, Missouri is an SEC team. They're not ranked in the top 10.
Right.
You know, it's not like you're playing, you know, but I guess if you compare them to the schedule last year, it's probably close, but I feel like this 2015 schedule is a close second to the 2013 schedule.
Yeah. So I'm going to go the opposite direction. Okay. And here's why. Nebraska's decent. They're not great. If you have a really good running back, he might go for 400 yards on them. I think the flip side is Bo Pelini may not be the coach come September 15th, 2015. And if they're breaking in a new coach and it's the opener of the year, that could be good or bad, right? It's hard to say. I think Boise State is going to be even better next year than they are this year, which they were pretty good this year. UCLA is strong. Now, Michigan's a huge wild card, right? If Brady Hoke is still the coach, which I think is very unlikely, I think we could go in there with a healthy BYU team and actually probably beat them pretty well, honestly, because right now they're pretty terrible. But imagine if John Harbaugh leaves the Niners and comes to – and did I say John? Jim.
You did.
Dang, Harbaugh brothers. Leaves the Niners and comes to the Wolverines, and they're now coached like and disciplined like those Stanford teams that he coached. That suddenly becomes a very different game, right? They got a lot.
Yeah, I mean, and even in the first season, I think it does become a much different game.
And it'll be, you know, they'll have three games under their belt, and they're 4- and 5-star recruits on that roster now, right? The coaching is not there. Then UConn will be terrible again. Eastern Carolina and Cincinnati could be okay. All in Provo. So it's a good October in Provo. And then you got San Jose State, Missouri, Fresno State, and Utah State. What it all hinges on, Matt, to me, is Missouri a top 25 team or not? If they are, this could be one of them. And then is Utah State maintained being a top 40 team? Those two things and the aforementioned Jim Harbaugh factor could vault this schedule past 2013.
No, and that's kind of what I'm saying, right?
Is
right now I don't see it there, but if some things change in the landscape, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is what we do, Matt. With a healthy Taysom Hill and a healthy Jamal Williams, which of course neither is a given at this point that they're ready to roll on game one against Nebraska, right? But assuming that happens, how many losses does BYU have in 2015?
Three.
I was going to say two. I was going to say two, but three, I think, is realistic. Is this a schedule that if we went undefeated, with what we know today, you mentioned it's hard to know these things, you know, this season isn't even done yet, but is this the type of schedule that could get us into the, with an undefeated season, get you into the football playoff?
Oh, quite possibly. I mean, you have the potential of a couple ranked teams on here.
Yes. And some tough road games. Which,
that's right. Apparently, so if you can run the table on that.
The committee is valuing that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's very interesting, Matt. Let's shift to the college football playoff for just un momentito. You see what I did there? A little Spanish thrown in there? You don't okay. even know what I'm talking about, do you?
I took a semester of Spanish in college. I don't
have any. How'd that go for you?
Yeah. Actually, I did really well in it, but it's a semester of Spanish 101.
Right, right.
I mean, how hard is that?
So let's look at the college football playoff, right? So the new rankings came out yesterday. Did you watch any of the ranking show?
I did not. I missed the ranking show.
Yeah, I don't watch. I tried it 1 week, and it was almost unbearable. Sorry, ESPN.
They drag all this out. They just put the four teams up on a screen. Right. I mean, you just tweet that.
Yes, yes, exactly. Or just the whole 25, right? Because people are curious who's in there and who dropped and went up and stuff. All right, so.
Right. Like anything beyond like 6 or 7 really matters, but okay.
Right. Fair enough. So, Matt, Alabama beats Mississippi State. I would say not as impressively as I thought they were going to. And they vault over everybody and get to the number one spot.
Of course they do.
Oregon holds it 2. Florida State holds it 3. And then Mississippi State, they got beat by Alabama, is still number 4. So, Matt, we did this 2 weeks ago. We're going to do it again. Who do you got at number 1?
Oregon.
Same here. I also have Oregon at number 1. Who do you have at number 2?
Bama.
At this point, I have Florida State, number 2.
All right.
Though, man, that Notre Dame win is looking less and less impressive as Notre Dame loses to Northwestern. Then at 3, do you have Florida State?
I guess, but only because they're undefeated. I mean...
Yeah, I know. It's kind of tough. They really don't... Like, what's Florida State's signature win? Right?
Right.
OT win against Clemson that doesn't turn out to be maybe as good as we thought they were. A very close win against Notre Dame, who doesn't turn out to be as good as we thought they were. And then they barely beat a fairly terrible Miami team. Now, granted, on the road, I get that, in a historically tough place to play, but Miami has now 3 ACC losses. I mean, this isn't a good team. So I'm with you. The Florida State one, I do have them 2nd, because they're undefeated, but part of me says, do they even deserve to be in the top 4? Like, are they really one of the top 4 teams in the country?
See, but I think that's the beauty of a playoff, is where you'll find that out in round 1.
Oh, well, I mean, right
when
now...
When they get whooped up on by Alabama.
Well, right now, they would play, if the playoffs started today, they'd play Oregon. Do you think Oregon's at least 2 touchdown favorite in that game?
Yeah, Oregon wins that game.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Vegas has them at like 10, but... It's going to be on a neutral side, a pretty heavy on Oregon. So then Mississippi State is at 4. Who do you have it for?
I got TCU.
You know, I really debated this when I was thinking about it, but guess who I put up there?
You're going to say Ohio State.
Ohio State.
Yep. I thought about that too.
Their last 2 weeks, Minnesota is a better team than you think, and they went on the road and beat them. And then they convincingly beat Michigan State on the road. Michigan State, while not an elite team, quite frankly, those 2 wins might be as good or better than any win that Florida State has. Their big problem is that loss to Virginia Tech.
the loss to Virginia Tech really does it for me. When I compare, if it comes down to comparing the two losses, I feel like the loss to Baylor is a little more respectable than the loss to Virginia Tech. And then I also like to compare shared opponents. Now, granted, it was, TCU didn't have to play Minnesota on the road. They did play them at home, and it was earlier in the season. But they beat them pretty handily.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, Matt, the big debate now is Baylor then gets this big win on the road at Oklahoma, yet they still, even though they beat TCU, can't vault them in the rankings. They stay hold at number 7. Where do you weigh that head-to-head between TCU and Baylor?
See, it's tough for me to discount that. But when I look at each team in isolation and just examine their body of work and do it that way, I totally understand how you end up with TCU ranked ahead of Baylor. But there is a piece of me that has real problems with putting somebody up ahead of a team that they lost to.
Yeah, I know. It's tough, but I agree with the committee. Baylor's loss to West Virginia is kind of like Ohio State's loss to Virginia Tech. The loss is just too bad, right? TCU, yes, their loss is to Baylor, but that's it. And that was on the road. And I watched that game. TCU, that was one where it's kind of who ends up with the ball last, right? That was a crazy game. And TCU's offense has gone from, I saw them early in the year, has gone from like, wow, I don't know if they're going to be that great. I mean, they were, in that win against Minnesota, it was a defensive win. I mean, they scored 30 points. But since that SMU game, they have put up some incredible numbers. But then how much does a tight win against Kansas hurt them? Do you think if they go in and blow Kansas, they're sitting ahead of Mississippi State?
Oh, if...
if TCU had gone in and just destroyed Kansas.
Oh, if they had gone in and destroyed Kansas.
Yeah, which they beat them by 4, right? Which Kansas is a bad team. So do you think that, or do you think Mississippi State, the argument is their only loss is to who we're now saying is number 1, and they lost on the road?
No, I think that if TCU had gone in and just blown Kansas away, I think they probably jump ahead of Mississippi State.
Okay.
But at the same time, I think when you look at the last couple of weeks of the season, I could almost get behind Baylor jumping out in front of TCU if they were to win out, depending on how they do it over the next 3 games. But strictly the TCU-Mississippi State question, yeah, if TCU had really handled their business against Kansas, I think they make that jump.
So who's going to be there when all is said and done? I think we both think Oregon is going to be there in the top 4. Is Bama going to be there?
I think Oregon and Bama will both be there.
Florida State? I think they're going to be there. They're not going to lose.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at what they've got left to do, I mean, Boston College and Florida?
Yeah, I mean, and then they got to play, the championship game against, I don't even know who it's against now. Duke lost last week, so it may be Georgia Tech that they end up playing in the championship game. But whoever it is, they're going to win, I think. So, yeah, right now, Georgia Tech has 2 conference losses, so does Duke, but of course, Georgia Tech has the head-to-head, and the nice thing for Georgia Tech is they don't play another conference game, so they're pretty much a lock there. So I don't know. Is it possible, Matt, that Florida State wins out and doesn't get in the top 4?
No, I think if they went out, there's nothing anybody's gonna be able to do.
Well, let me paint a picture for you. Okay, all right. Let's say that, where's the standings here? So let's go to the SEC standings. Let's say Alabama wins out, which they should, and then they're playing Missouri in the championship game, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Alabama beats Missouri. So now you've got Mississippi State wins out, so they're at 1 loss. So you got 2 SEC teams where it's pretty clear they're both going to be in there, okay? You've got Oregon that, as long as they win out, they're going to be there. What if what you said is true? What if Baylor goes and just wallops the rest of their schedule?
Mm-hmm.
I think you could make a very strong case for Baylor over Florida State.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think you could. And but all of this falls apart, Matt, if Oregon loses somewhere along the way.
I agree.
If Oregon loses, Florida State's in. Two teams aren't going to jump an undefeated Florida State, but one might.
One may. But I think Baylor wins out.
Yes, I think they do.
And I believe that may get them a jump over TCU.
Yes. It could, depending, like you said, on the impressiveness of those wins.
Right. But, you know, you look at a couple of shared opponents and things. I think if they can really take care of business with their remaining three opponents, they may be able to jump TCU.
Yes.
Mississippi State, I think, finishes this season with two losses.
Yeah, see, that's where it also falls flat, is I think they lose to Ole Miss.
Yeah, I agree.
And then all of a sudden you're looking at one of those Big 12 teams, TCU or Baylor, gets in if they went out. And, you know, does that mean the SEC only gets one team into the playoff in the first year?
If Mississippi State loses to Ole Miss, only one SEC team's going. And it's going to be Bama.
Yeah, I know. And earlier this year, we were painting scenarios where three of them got in.
Yeah.
And it was certainly possible. Certainly possible. So Matt, let's shift gears completely here. And we're going to talk some basketball. We've got a tweet bag question from Justin Whiting. That's at JN Whiting on Twitter. Who would you rather face in an old-fashioned game of Red Rover, Red Rover? Paul Lasique or Corbin Kafusi?
Oh, my gosh. Kafusi.
I think so, but it's a very close, like,
Paul Lasique will kill you.
Basically,
you will die.
Both those guys, I'm just letting go.
Listen, right? You ask me, if I have to choose between those two, it's a no-brainer for me.
Yes.
If the choices are between Paul Lasique and someone else, I will always choose someone else in this scenario.
Yes. Yes. I agree with you. That's it's an excellent question, Justin. And
it's a scary question. I may lose sleep tonight over this.
I will let go. I have done that in Red Rover in the past, and I would do it again. You can take me and put me on your team. You know what I mean? I am not going to let either of those men run through my arm.
They're going to separate your arm from the rest of your body.
My arm, like, the rest of my body wouldn't move, and my arm would just come detached from my body.
Yeah.
That crazy, my friend. That crazy. So, excellent question. So let's get into the basketball team, Matt. Two games to base on, and a little bit different, the two games, as far as exactly who played and all that kind of stuff. But let's start with Tyler Hawes, Matt. He's averaging 19.5 points, which is below his average last year, and I think a lot less than where we thought he would be. Are you at all worried about Tyler Hawes?
No, I think it's early. You know, they're still feeling some things out with lineups, and given the competition we've been playing, I think they've been doing some things a little bit differently. Now, I think we all are aware that he needs to average 21.8 points per game to pass Jimmer.
Yes.
So, I mean, if he wants to do that, obviously he's going to have to get that number up.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, the other one is Chase Fisher, who's averaging 18 points, 8 for 15 from behind the arc, Matt. This is kind of what we expected from Chase Fisher, right?
Oh, yeah, 8 for 15 behind the arc, perfect from the charity stripe. You know, he's the guy that we can count on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you've now plugged in. I don't know defensively this is true, but certainly on offense, now we have more than an adequate replacement for Matt Carlino's offense. Fair to say?
Well, I mean, you don't just replace Carlino.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, you do. You know, so we've got that. Then we've got Halford.
I mean, you hope to get over it, but I mean.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's tough. Halford had one good game and then one not great game, which is kind of just Skylar Halford. So
yeah, that's well, that was to be expected.
Get used to that. But in one game, Matt, the first game, Halford ended up being the backup point guard to Kyle Collinsworth. In the game last night, it was more Anson Winder being the backup point guard. So the question we have from Andre Hutchins, that's at AC underscore Hutchins, who's going to end up getting the most of the backup point guard minutes? You know, Winder played well last night, Andre says. Bartley basically has hardly played this year. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, as I mentioned, Halford was actually bringing the ball up against Long Beach State. So, Matt, do you see it as Winder? Do you think we'll see more Bartley eventually? How does that shape up behind Collinsworth?
I think it's Winder. I think Halford is not consistent enough to do it.
No.
And I haven't seen anything from Bartley so enough. Far that makes me feel like that he's going to be the man there.
Yeah, and Winder is the better defender, too. And perimeter defense is something that's haunted us the last couple years.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a, I think Winder will get it. I think the other part of this question that Andre didn't have is right now Collinsworth is playing 15 minutes a game. He's basically starting and both halves and then disappearing because, you know, he's coming back slowly from injury.
Right. He's kind of on a pitch count, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Analogy
that's been used.
By the end of the year, he's going to be averaging 30 minutes a game. Right.
I mean, the theory is that he's going to rest a little bit tonight, and then starting with the Invitational, he's going to be taken off the count. They're going to take the leash off.
Yeah,
I mean, we'll see how true that is.
But. Yeah, I'd be shocked if that's totally true. But if we're going to beat San Diego State, who's a very very good basketball team, Kyle Collinsworth can't play 15 minutes.
No, absolutely. But I think where you're at right now is. You just want to keep him healthy. You know, he took
yes.
a weird shot to the back last night. I think he caught a knee in the back. Looked like he was in, you know, a lot of pain back behind the bench for a couple minutes. You know, but I think you just want to ease him in so that when you get to that point, he's ready to go.
So, Matt, we look at the front court, and Nate Austin is doing Nate Austin things. He's rebounding. He's scoring occasionally with his little jump shot. But you look at the rest of that backcourt, Isaac Nielsen, Dalton Nixon, Corbin Kafusi. Nobody can score out of that group. Like, you can't, there's nobody that's playing with their back to the basket. I mean, all of them have tried, but Nielsen looks a little better, but like Kafusi is not. Defensively, I mean, he's going to block some shots and get some rebounds. But I don't think he actually has a block shot yet. But he's going to do that. But, man, on the offensive side, he looks like that really tall guy who comes and plays pickup ball with you that really struggles to do anything with the ball in his hands.
Where everybody expects him to really be throwing it down.
Right. But he's, you know, so... What's your takeaway? Are we in trouble on the front court? I mean, is that just the Achilles heel?
Yeah, that's going to be the story of the year. Is what's going on in the front court and the development of some of these players?
Yeah.
You know, are Nielsen and Kafusi going to be able to turn into what we need them to be for this team to be competitive on a high level? That's the question. That's the story, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. The other story in the front court, Matt, is Josh Sharp. 9 total minutes in 2 games. I think I am a little surprised that Nielsen and Nixon both have significantly more minutes than Sharp. Do you think Sharp is just the odd man out in that front court, or do you think some point this year he ends up, because at least he's consistent, maybe not great, that he ends up getting some minutes back?
I think it's going to come down to what you just said. You know, if Nielsen and Kafusi develop quickly, I think we're going to continue to see sparse minutes for Josh Sharp.
Yeah.
But if they can't get there and the front court continues to struggle, I think that Dave Rose is going to be forced to try and rotate things around and and figure out who is going to step up into that role.
Yeah.
And in that case, Josh Sharp is going to get more of a chance.
Yeah, absolutely. What I tell you I'm a little excited about from a like game management standpoint is we have, at the end of games, Halford, Fisher, and Haas to shoot free throws.
Mm-hmm.
Collinsworth, as you know, he hasn't had many yet. He's only had four, but his free throw struggles continue as he started the year 1-4 from behind the charity stripe. But at the end of games, when you're inbounding it in, you're going to feel pretty good with Haas, Fisher, and Halford taking free throws at the end of a tight game, right?
Oh, yeah.
Got three guys who can play on the court at the same time, potentially at the end of games with a lead, which last year we struggled a little with Carlino and Collinsworth getting some of those free throws.
Yep.
So Matt, looking out at that San Diego State game, percent chance we upset San Diego State to start off the Invitational?
I don't know that we're ready yet, so I'm going to go ahead and say 45.
Oh, see, I'm going to say 99. No, I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding.
You're going to go lower than 45, aren't you?
Yeah, I was going to go lower. I think it's like 30. I mean, if Collinsworth were to come out and play 30 minutes, and Haas has a like Tyler Haas like 2014-15 coming out party, you know, then maybe. But I mean, San Diego State is good, you know, and we're going to have a hard time matching up with them, and we're going to have a hard time defensively against some of their athleticism. I mean, it's not like San Diego State's like going to win the title this year or anything. They're not that good, but they're a top 30 team, and we're not yet. I mean, they may be even a top 15 team, and we're certainly now. Do we have the potential to be a top 30 team this year? Yeah, I mean, if everything that we talked about before and in our basketball preview show hits, then yeah, we could do that. But I think, you know, the rating systems now have us in the mid 40s, and I think that's probably where we are now. You know, we're a top 50 team, but we're not a top 25 team, and they are. And so I think we will lose against them.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on the basketball team here in the early going?
No, not really more than we've discussed. I do see myself watching a lot more college basketball this season than I have previously overall. You know, it seems like, you know, this, maybe it's just, you know, you get early in the season and you're excited about hoops, but I think this will be a fun year in college basketball.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm excited about it as a whole. I'm excited to watch how this team develops. You know, I wish Tyler Haas in his senior season had a deeper supporting cast, because I think he's the type of player that, like Jimmer in his last year, deserves a chance to make a run in the tournament. And like we discussed in our basketball preview, that's certainly the upside of this team, but the most likely scenario is they're kind of a one and done tournament team, right? And it would be great to see Haas, you know, get a couple of, you know, get to the Sweet 16 and those type of things. So, but that being said, I feel good about the future. Some of these guys are going to play on some pretty good BYU teams, I think, in the next 3 or 4 years.
Yep.
So, Matt, we usually start off with Cougars in the News, but now we're going to end with Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
So, let's talk some Cougars in the News, my friend. First up, Jimmer Fredette, he's still not playing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the revenge game against Sacramento, he didn't even play. So no revenge game. Brandon Davies, on the other hand, is in this season averaging 22 minutes a game, 8.5 points, almost 4 rebounds, shooting 46% from the floor. Now, granted, Philadelphia is terrible, but he's getting some minutes. He's in the NBA.
He's,
man,
in the mix.
Yeah, he's in the mix. Good for Brandon Davies. Ezekiel Ansah's season. He's having a good season. 5.5 sacks. Hasn't had a sack in his last, I think, the last three games. But And then Vannoy is back, but unfortunately he's not playing a ton and has three tackles so far. But
well, it's hard to come in midseason off an injury as a rookie.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
That's a tough road.
Yeah, absolutely. But he'll be there, and by the end of the year. Now, granted, I want neither of them to lay a hand on Tom Brady this weekend. Okay, you just keep your hands off of Tom.
Yeah, maybe we need to just make a deal there.
Because I don't going to the NFL, is Arizona any good? I mean, are they a legitimate with Drew Stanton as a quarterback? Do you think they're a legitimate title contender?
Not with Drew Stanton as a quarterback.
Were they better off with Carson Palmer? I think so. Yeah. I'm usually one, you know, I don't think veteranness is as valuable as people think. But I do think as an NFL quarterback in the playoffs, I'd rather have somebody that's been there than somebody
Absolutely.
That hasn't. Okay, more tragic NFL story this year as far as career is concerned. RG3 or Cam Newton?
Oh, Cam Newton.
Gosh, I pick one, but I'd say Newton. He may still be good. His team may be just that terrible. Right.
They're just awful. I think Cam Newton has got a lot of talent. I think Cam Newton has the ability to be very competitive at the NFL level, but he's got a bunch of high school kids out there blocking for him.
It was painful to watch. I've watched some of their last two games. It's painful. Like,
how many times did he get hit? Was it 2 weekends ago? I mean, it's just.
I think it was 2 weekends ago, and they brought out the stat that he has over the last 3 years been hit or sacked like I want to say like 1.5 million times. That seems too high, and that it's way more than any other quarterback. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and part of that's his style, right? He will extend plays and all that kind of stuff, but part of it's the fact that they just have a Swiss cheese offensive line, which is. But I'll tell you,
Swiss
what,
cheese is kind.
RG3. That rookie season was pretty awesome. Unlike Newton, where I'm with you, if they reform that team and put guys around him, if he got traded into a team that was good or something, I think Newton would be. I think RG3 might be done. I just don't know if those injuries just took out. If you take, sometimes guys get hurt and they never get back to the same person they were.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate. So Matt, you must, like me as a Patriots fan, be giddy.
Oh yeah.
Be giddy with joy as the Patriots went from a month and a half ago being Tom Brady with Boston sports media asking if he should step aside. And now of course he's an MVP candidate and they're 8-2. Matt, you and I both grew up in Massachusetts. Are Boston sports media and fans turning out to be just really obnoxious? I mean, really, Tom Brady? Let's replace Tom Brady? Signs in the stands? Really?
That is pretty obnoxious.
That's pretty obnoxious. I think you got to give these guys a couple of games to figure it out. But what was more surprising with you about New England? Some running back you'd never heard of scoring like 3 touchdowns? Or the fact that this defense can take the most powerful offense in the NFL, or one of the most powerful in the Colts, and basically make them look inept for most of the game.
See, what's interesting about that is neither of those things really surprised me coming out of Bill Belichick. And now I'm really wearing my Patriots glasses. But, you know, he finds a way to do both of those things when he needs to.
Yes. Well, my favorite thing is going to be, as happens, Jonas Gray is now the hottest guy in fantasy, right?
Everybody wants him, right?
And guess
what? Did you
what?
Pick him up?
No. Because you know what? Next week, he's going to have 5 carries, right? Like, yeah. This is what Belichick does. He creates
a plan.
He toys
with fantasy owners.
Yeah, well, he definitely does that. But this is going to go back to BYU. One of my frustrations with Bronco, and I like Bronco. You know I'm pro-Bronco. One of my frustrations with BYU is that after I've now watched the Patriots with Belichick coaching for the last decade plus, I love that they game plan for the team they're playing. They saw a weakness in the Colts, and they decided to run the ball with Jonas Gray 37 times. Okay? More carries than that guy had in his entire rest of his career combined, right?
Right.
So they see a weakness and they go, the next week the offense is going to look and the defense is going to look entirely different.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They put Revis on not the best receiver. They didn't put him on T.Y. Hilton. They put him on Reggie Wayne. But then they could double team T.Y. Hilton. You know what I mean? Like, these type of things is what I think modern great coaches do. They plan for their opponent, and you don't know until the first snaps exactly what their plan is going to be. Now, it doesn't always work, and you still have to have the players to make it work. Do you wish Bronco was a little bit more like that, or are you okay with his, we're going to do our thing every game and simplify? Because it's a little harder to do that in college with guys that are limited on how many hours a week you actually can coach them.
Well, if you look at what the Patriots traditionally do, and I think this might be part of what fueled the, hey, it's time for Brady to go hysteria, is they play young players. You know, yes. They'll get a couple of veterans in there. You know, get your Revis or whatever. But they kind of have a history of not holding on to guys for very long, not keeping guys into the twilight of their career. And I think that's what requires you to make adjustments for specific opponents. At the college football level, if you're Nick Saban and you're Alabama, most of the teams you play, you're just going to do your thing and they're going to have to figure out a way to stop you.
Right.
But if you're playing, you know, if you're a program like BYU, I think you are better served to with the level of talent that you're able to recruit and that you probably have on your roster, I think you're probably better served by spending some time game planning very specifically for individual opponents.
Yeah, I agree. There's a little bit of apples and oranges, right? I don't know if Belichick would be as good of a college coach as he is an NFL coach, right?
No, he wouldn't.
We saw Saban had a problem with the reverse, right? He went into the pro, and the way he kind of ran his show didn't, at least in the short time that he was in Miami, didn't actually work. And then we've seen
Pete
a guy,
Carroll, the first time he tried. Spurrier.
Yeah, Steve Spurrier. And heck, first time Belichick tried, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I do really like that. And it also, as a fan of a team, it's good to see that you can see the effort more, right? It's not that I'm questioning BYU's effort as a coaching staff. It's just you can see, wow, they decided to put Revis on Wayne and then double-team Hilton, or holy crap, they decided to run Jonas Gray 35 times. You know what I mean?
Nobody saw that coming.
Nobody saw that coming. And that's, but on the other hand, the results are what matter, and the thing that's getting Bronco in trouble with fans and others really has nothing to do with style. People say it's style, but in the end, it's wins and losses, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we are undefeated at this point, no one's saying, hey, that defensive coordinator in Utah, out of Utah, is looking pretty good.
No, I think you get a very few people who are saying those types of things in that scenario, just so that when things go south, they can say at parties, well, I've been saying this for years.
Yes, yes. And on Cougar Board, they can point out a thread they started 6 months ago. Well, I told you guys this might happen.
Yeah, it's just trolls hedging.
Yes, it's hedging trolls. I like that. That could be our new rock band, Hedging Trolls.
The Hedging Trolls.
I like that. I like
that. What kind of music do the Hedging Trolls play? Are they kind of like a... I mean, it sounds to me like that's going to be like some pretty hard stuff.
Yeah, I think like punk metal type of stuff. Either that or folk music. One or the other.
Maybe we could go either way on that one.
Yeah, I think you could. So, Matt, percent chance... Bronco Mendenhall is not the coach at BYU next year.
Zero.
I know. Dick Harmon said it on the podcast a couple weeks ago. Jerem Jordan said it last week. Anybody that thinks Bronco's getting fired doesn't really understand how BYU works. I'm sorry, they just don't. I mean, it's not. They are not reactionary as a administration. I mean, heck, we still, they just don't do that. Now,
I think Nick Allen might not make it.
I think there is a very good chance that the defensive coaching staff looks a little different next year. Yes, totally agree. Has Dr. Anai won you over?
I feel like with the injury and everything, I that has really been lost in the shuffle here, hasn't it?
Yeah.
But it's a little bit difficult to assess.
Well, I will say
he's certainly adapted to his personnel.
Yeah, that's what I'm impressed with, right? He did not just stubbornly, because one of the knocks on him is he just doesn't change, right? Mm-hmm. Which seems a little silly seeing that he's totally changed. But I'm with you. He adjusted the offense to fit Christian Stewart, and it's maximizing that guy's talents. And he had planned an offense for Taysom Hill to maximize his talents. So that has gotten lost in the shuffle. But our struggles have been more defensive than offensive, right?
I mean, oh, absolutely. That's where everybody looks, where the struggles are.
Even with the injuries. So, Matt, we'll be back next week to preview, I'm not sure what night, but we'll be back next week to preview the last regular season game, big game against Cal. And, of course, we'll have more basketball to talk about next time. We may even have a San Diego State game to discuss.
Oh, and we know how much you love talking about
San Diego State. I love San Diego State. I wish, if I hadn't gone to BYU, I would have gone to San Diego State.
Yeah, right.
That's not true at all. Though San Diego is a pretty town. It's a pretty town. But I don't like San Diego State. But we'll be back next week to talk about that. Check out loyalcougars.com for great ongoing coverage of both BYU basketball and BYU football. Of course, check us out on iTunes. Give us a rating. We've got... I think we're right now currently at 5 stars average, man.
That's pretty awesome.
That's pretty good. But go check that out. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and of course, we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!